Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for January 4th. We'll begin our reading today with the front page article by a staff report entitled "Virus Cases Continue to Rise at Prison, Danville." The Danville Correctional Center continues to see an increasing number of inmates and staff testing positive for COVID-19. More than 40% of the inmate population of 1,546 males have now been infected at some point since the pandemic began at the medium security prison. The major spike in case numbers began in late fall. The Illinois Department of Corrections on Thursday evening reported 728 COVID-19 cases among inmates, 610 of which are active and 118 recovered. Those numbers reflected an increase of 47 active cases over a two-day period this week. There have been 134 cases among staff members reported since March. Of those, 48 remain active cases and 86 have recovered. The active staff cases have slowed, with only 3 new cases over the two-day period prior to the year's end. In an effort to deal with the prison outbreak, IDOC states that it is taking aggressive steps to protect staff and men and women in custody by implementing surveillance and outbreak mitigation testing strategies. That mitigation effort began the week of December 6th as the outbreak surged. When implemented at a facility, all staff will be routinely tested, and the frequency of testing will be determined by the Office of Health Services based on the positivity rate of the county in which the facility is located. That's according to the IDOC. When the Office of Health Services identifies an outbreak at a facility, all staff and individuals in custody at that facility will be tested approximately every 3 days until no new cases are identified for 14 days. At that time, the outbreak will be considered under control and staff will undergo COVID-19 testing in accordance with the facility surveillance testing protocol. And here's another staff report entitled 293 New Cases Since Thursday, Danville. Vermilion County greeted the new year with the same stubborn problem. COVID-19 has a stranglehold on the area and shows no signs of letting up. As the clock ticked down on 2020 Thursday evening, health officials reported 117 new cases of the virus, which combined with Wednesday's report of 176 new cases, boosted the total by 293 over the two-day period leading up to the end of the year. Vaccinations have begun in the county for frontline healthcare workers, but it will take time before the vaccines are made available for the general population, health officials have said. Thursday evening's report of 117 new cases included 4 residents in their 90s, 5 in their 80s, 4 in their 70s, 12 in their 60s, 17 in their 50s, 16 in their 40s, 19 in their 30s, 16 in their 20s, 12 teens, 6 grade school age children, 1 preschooler, 3 toddlers, and 2 infants. On Wednesday night, the 176 new cases included 2 in their 90s, 6 in 80s, 7 in their 70s, 29 in their 60s, 23 in their 50s, 26 in their 40s, 28 in their 30s, 23 in their 20s, 14 teens, 10 grade school age children, 6 preschoolers, and 2 toddlers. The new cases over the two-day period raised the county's total since the pandemic began in March to 5,825. 748 of which are active. The year closed with Vermilion County's death toll from COVID-19 related illnesses at 77, most of which have occurred in the past 3 months. Health officials reported there are currently 39 COVID-19 positive county residents hospitalized. The state's mobile COVID testing team was at the health department in Danville on Wednesday and Thursday and tested 121 people over the 2 days, 45 on Thursday and 76 on Wednesday. Vaccinations continue to be administered after their arrival on Wednesday at medical centers. Vaccines are also ready to be given to healthcare workers at assisted living facilities this weekend, including at the Hawthorne Inn Nursing Center in Danville. The county's case numbers have risen considerably in recent days. Because of a widespread outbreak at the Danville Correctional Center, which has affected both inmates and staff. The Illinois Department of Corrections reports more than 600 current cases involving inmates and staff at the medium security prison on Danville's east side. Our next article is entitled, Future Focus, DAC Takes What Learned in 2020 to the Next Year, by Jennifer Bailey. It was quite a year for adjustments due to the coronavirus pandemic for Danville Area Community College. Students and faculty had to work with all online courses in March 2020 at the start of the pandemic. Coordinator of the Student Service Loan Program, Carla Boyd, who also is Assistant Vice President of Student Services and Chief Diversity Officer on campus, said in the fall that about 75 students had borrowed laptops, webcams, and other technology equipment for classes. The college purchased these laptops, headsets, and other equipment through Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, CARES Act funds. The transition to online learning and teaching was followed in May by a virtual graduation. DAC President Stephen Nacko commends the students and staff for the combination of online, hybrid, and in-person classes this year. He said, "The students have been amazing and resilient. The resilience of our faculty, staff, and students this year is something I'm going to remember for a long time." The college has offered discounts on classes this fall. Those financial discounts not only help enrollment, but help students keep on track to graduate. "We're going to treat spring 2021 like we treated the fall," Nacko said. "We need to save enrollment. About half the classes are expected to be in person starting next year, but that could change. Welding, machinery, and culinary are just some of the areas that have still been on campus. Science labs have been in smaller groups." Nacko said they hope to have May 2021's graduation in the new air-conditioned gym. "We just have to keep an open mind on it," he added, about next year, saying they just have to keep on doing what they did this fall. Construction projects at the college remain a priority. This year, the college saw the installation of two health heating ventilation air conditioning units on the roof of the Mary Miller Gymnasium. Renovation plans also continue for the U.S. Army Reserve Center, which is the latest addition to DAC's campus, for the nursing and medical imaging departments moving from the cramped lower level of the Mary Miller complex and into what will become the college's Health Science Education Center. Renovations are estimated at about $5.5 million. An expansion is needed for the William B. Black Health Professions Center, which houses programs in nursing, radiologic technology, sonography, and echocardiography. The reserve building would house about a dozen classrooms on two stories, and a healthcare simulation lab, which would be like a real nursing station. Nacko said funding is being sought through private donations, including naming the center, and state funding, with money from DAC's capital reserve to make up the difference. He said they are almost ready to complete buildable plans. If they get major funding commitments, building plans could start by spring, with construction work starting by summer. other construction that is progressing is on Jacobs Hall. It's beautiful, NACO said. The DAC board last year approved a $1.65 million contract with Commercial Builders of Champaign for the renovation of the Dr. Alice Marie Jacobs Hall Carnegie Library. The 8,730-square-foot former Carnegie Library will include a lobby, gathering spaces, restrooms, and storage on the main floor. The lower level will contain meeting rooms, restrooms, storage, and mechanical rooms. The college received $2 million that Julius W. Hegler II bequeathed for the project. It will literally be an art gallery for student art, performances, used by the foundation, NACO said about uses for the liberal arts space. The renovated hall could open in May. Other 2021 projects include $2.5 million rehabilitation of clock tower and horticulture centers and funding support for an on-campus softball field. NACO said how wonderful it would be to see a softball field off East Main Street in the large grassy area now at the campus, with players, students, and activities. Players now use Winter Park. And now we'll turn to an article entitled, Chicago Ends 2020 with 769 Homicides as Gun Violence Surges. This is from the Associated Press, Chicago. The number of homicides and shootings in Chicago spiked dramatically in 2020, ending with more bloodshed than in all but 1 year in more than two decades, statistics released by police on Friday revealed. After 3 years of falling homicide totals, 2020 ended with 769 homicides, 275 more than the previous year, and the most since the 784 homicides in 2016. The latest shooting victim figures told the same story, with the year ending with 4,033 shooting victims compared with 2,598 the year before. And it never let up, as is illustrated by the fact that in December there were 50 homicides, 19 more than occurred in December of 2019. None of these numbers come as a surprise, as the year unfolded with news reports about violence that often included the word deadliest, such as after Memorial Day weekend, the deadliest in 5 years. Then a few days later, May 31st, ended with more homicides, 18, than in any single day in memory. Chicago was not alone. During that weekend in particular, which came after the death of George Floyd, after being forcibly detained by Minneapolis police, cities across the United States witnessed spasms of violence. The year ended in Detroit, Washington, D.C., New York, Milwaukee, and other cities, with more killings than the years before. The same held true in smaller cities, including Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Rockford, Illinois. Chicago, the nation's third largest city, saw hundreds more homicides than either New York or Los Angeles. Law enforcement officials and experts around the U.S. have pointed to social and economic upheaval caused by the COVID-19 virus, public sentiment toward police following Floyd's death, and a historic shortage of jobs and resources in poorer communities as contributing factors. According to the Chicago Police Department, 79 officers were shot at in 2020, compared with 22 who were fired upon the year before. The number of officers who were struck by bullets doubled from 5 in 2019 to 10 in 2020. Our next article is entitled, Pritzker Pardons 9,100 Low-Level Cannabis Convictions, Associated Press, Chicago. Thousands of people in Illinois convicted of low-level marijuana charges are starting the new year with clean records. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Thursday issued pardons for 9,129 low-level cannabis conviction records and 492,192 cannabis-related arrests were expunged by the Illinois State Police. The expungement process is part of the state law that legalized the licensed sales of marijuana that began in 2020 and is designed to reduce the impact of drug laws particularly for minorities. Statewide, Illinoisans hold hundreds of thousands low-level cannabis-related records, a burden disproportionately shouldered by communities of color, Pritzker said in a statement. We will never be able to fully remedy the depth of that damage, but we can govern with the courage to admit the mistakes of our past and the decency to set a better path forward. State law requires that 47,000 cannabis-related arrests between 2013 and 2019 had to be expunged by Friday, but with the expungement of nearly 500,000 arrests, the state police said it finished the job of completing automatic expungement at the state level 4 years ahead of schedule. Our next article is entitled, With 2021 Comes New Laws for Illinoisans to Follow, again from the Associated Press, Springfield. The arrival of 2021 brings with it few new Illinois laws to the shortened spring session of the General Assembly caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. About a half dozen new state laws and policies went into effect Friday. In 2020, more than 250 new laws took effect. As a result of legislative action, low-wage workers across Illinois are getting a raise, with the minimum wage increasing by $1 to $11 per hour. It follows a $1 increase on January 1, 2020, and a 75-cent raise on July 1st. Illinois is now one of the first states to limit the out-of-pocket price of insulin, limiting it to $100 for a 30-day supply, regardless of how much insulin is needed to fill a prescription. Illinois law enforcement agencies can now collect DNA samples of a missing person's family members in an effort to create a reference DNA sample. A program that protects the addresses of domestic violence victims will now include victims of sexual assault and stalking. The Illinois Attorney General's Address Confidentiality Program allows eligible victims to use a substitute address and mail forwarding. Also, the Secretary of State's office now allows drivers to register their cars for 2 years at a time, but not immediately because of the pandemic. We'll now turn to obituaries. The first, Larry French, 77, of Texas City, Texas, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away December 25, 2020, at his home. A celebration of his life will be held at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, January 5th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington, Indiana, 423rd Street, Covington, Indiana. Visitation will be 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday, prior to his service at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Park, Danville, Illinois. Memorial donations may be given in his name to any local organization of the donor's choice. Next, Paul Awesome Lawson, Lawson 67, of Danville, passed away at 12:25 p.m. at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, Illinois, on December 28, 2020. Per Paul's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded and services will be at a later date. Paul would encourage everyone to be kind to their neighbors and in some way pay it forward. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. Gerald L. Martoglio, 81, of Bloomington, passed away from COVID on Tuesday, December 29th at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center, Bloomington. Due to COVID restrictions, a private service will precede entombment in the mausoleum at the East Lawn Memorial Gardens, Bloomington. The service will be recorded and made available on the funeral home website. See Jerry's Tribute Wall. A public celebration of life will take place this summer at Lake Bloomington. When arranged, the date and location will be announced. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to a GoFundMe account established to support his many charitable causes. And you can find that at gf.me/u/zd6k3i. Donations to St. Jude Children's Hospital would also be most welcome. And here's another staff report. Wilson Crossley, honored by Vermilion County, Indiana Governor. Cayuga, Indiana. Vermilion County Commissioner Tim Wilson was honored for his many years of service by Vermilion County Councilman John Michael Major on behalf of the Vermilion County Council and Commissioner at a recent meeting. Commissioner Wilson is honored for outstanding public service, including personal sacrifice and perfect attendance in the performance of such service, and motivated by patriotism, good citizenship, and a sense of public duty as President of the Vermilion County Commissioners for 24 years. Tim became Commissioner when I was 2 years old. I was his best customer when his gas station was open. My dad often took me there, and I would buy up all the pop, candy, and ice cream that I could get my hands on. Commissioner Wilson answers his phone day and night to ensure that he is there for anyone who needed him, whether it's about government services, personal problems, or someone to talk to. Tim was always there to answer the phone. He didn't care about any recognition. He only cared about doing his job, and he did it well. Thank you for your countless years of public service, said Vermilion County Councilman John Michael Major. Tim is a lifelong resident of Cayuga, Indiana, and has served as president of the Vermilion County Commissioners for 24 years. In those 24 years, he has never missed a meeting. Prior to becoming a commissioner, Tim served on the Cayuga Town Board for 8 years, has been a member of the Cayuga Volunteer Fire Department for 42 years plus, and has served as chief since 1985. Tim runs Wilson's Towing, a small family-owned business located in Cayuga. Even though he has a full-time job, he has maintained his commissioner duties as a loyal public servant. Vermilion County Commissioner Harry Crossley was presented Sangamore of the Wabash by Vermilion County Councilman John Michael Major on behalf of Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb at recent commissioner meeting. Harry is a lifelong resident of Clinton, Indiana, and has served as a Vermilion County Commissioner for 28 years. His service didn't stop as an elected official. Harry fought for his country valiantly as a member of the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam. He's been married to his wife, Susan, for 52 years. They have two children, Harry Jr., Butch, Lori, and countless grandchildren. Harry loves spending time with his grandchildren, and they are the joy of his life. Harry held several jobs over the years, but spent the majority of his life with the Teamsters. He's been a HOD carrier, bus driver, Fairview Park water superintendent, worked for the Indiana Department of Transportation, General Telephone. In the 70s, he had a full-service gas station, Crossley's Corner, and did mechanic work. He worked out of the Teamsters Hall 144 and 135 for over 32 years, holding various positions, and retired from Wabash Valley Asphalt in 2008. Even though he retired from the Teamsters Hall, he's maintained his commissioner duties as a loyal Vermilion County resident. His sense of duty is outstanding, as he's able to connect with those of all walks of life. Harry has always held the image of a better and stronger community, where people come together for the greater good while working alongside one another. He didn't care about any recognition. He only cared about doing his job, and he did it well. On behalf of Governor Eric Holcomb of the great state of Indiana, I am honored to present to you the state's highest civilian honor, the Sangamore of the Wabash, said Councilman John Michael Major, who nominated Crossley. The Sangamore of the Wabash is the highest honor an Indiana governor regularly bestows upon individuals, second only to the Sachem, which is given at most to only one person each year. Holcomb bestows only a very limited number of Sangamores each year. The award is given at the governor's discretion. The governor reserves the Sangamore for those who have distinguished themselves by humanity in living loyalty and friendship, wisdom and inspiration in leadership, and for those who have contributed to their communities in an extraordinary manner or distinguished themselves in service to the state or to the governor. Our next article is entitled, No One Could Have Imagined How 2020 Would Turn Out, by Danville native Kevin Cullen, a former commercial news reporter. The New Yorker's new cover story is entitled, The Plague Year, and what a year it has been. Who could have imagined at this time last year what 2020 would bring? Not me, not you, not anybody. It's still hard to grasp the fact that COVID-19 has killed more than 300,000 Americans, helped defeat an incumbent president, left millions unemployed, ruined businesses, upended sports, and closed schools, theaters, restaurants, parks, even churches. So far, our family's been lucky. None of our loved ones has perished. Two aunts, both in nursing homes, came down with COVID, as did two nephews and one of their wives. One daughter now works from home. The other is a nurse who sometimes treats COVID patients. Lori and I are retired. We wear masks, but we've been around plenty of people who don't. Still, the pandemic has affected everyday life in many ways. We haven't been to a movie in nearly a year. Although we miss the theater experience and the overpriced popcorn, it's not a big deal. Staying at home more has been great for my reading and genealogy. Online, I've discovered all sorts of ancestors, and I've read 15 or 20 books that have been waiting for me for years. We still go to church every Sunday, and masks are mandatory. Every other pew is roped off. We figure attendance is at about 25%. It's sad. My monthly breakfasts with former coworkers have ceased. Some of our favorite restaurants have reduced their hours or switched to carry out only. We do our best to patronize those small businesses, and we leave good tips. I've always made a point of visiting little retail shops that must be scrambling to stay afloat. We haven't been on a plane or a train. We made a weekend trip to Louisville, Kentucky, and spent a week with six other family members in Charleston, South Carolina. That's it. Although the Appalachian Trail, my home away from home for 40-plus years, was all but closed, I've been able to do lots of short hikes locally. Still, I missed loading up the backpack, taking Amtrak, and hitting the trail for a week. COVID-19 killed three celebrities whose lives crossed mine, if only for a moment. Lori and I loved legendary singer-songwriter John Prine, and we saw him in concert twice. When he died last spring, it was like losing a fun-loving, brilliant friend. Country music's Charlie Pride died December 12th. I interviewed him before the first Farm Aid concert in 1985. Kind, sweet, and self-effacing, he remained at heart a sharecropper's son from Sludge, Mississippi. The late Herman Cain was the former Godfather's Pizza CEO who ran for the 2012 GOP presidential nomination. I met him and covered his inspiring talk to a class at Purdue University. He absolutely dazzled, and when he closed by singing The Impossible Dream, everyone, including yours truly, dabbed tears away. What a year. You can reach Kevin Cullen, the former commercial news reporter, at irishhiker@aol.com. And here's a little bit of the editorial looking ahead to serve readers in 2021. A community's newspaper plays an important role in the lives of people it serves. A newspaper's primary function is to inform, to provide facts so that residents can make informed decisions regarding issues in their community. We will continue to hold elected officials accountable for their actions and to call for the doors of government to be open to public scrutiny. Secret deals and clandestine negotiations often benefit special interests rather than the public. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for January 4th. I hope you have a great week, and I do look forward to reading with you again soon. Happy New Year!